Good morning. You're tuned in to Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, the new Safer at Home, or Phase 2, of Colorado's COVID-19 response, as announced by the Governor on Monday, was the topic at Boulder City Council last night. We'll have more coming up after headlines. Then, today marks the 50th anniversary of the first ever Earth Day. Numerous events had been planned for Colorado to mark Earth Day and Earth Week. Those are now happening online. We'll hear from some of the people involved. Two regular Wednesday morning features, Make Them Hear You and Naturally with Brigitte Mars. Then, after headlines from the BBC, we'll get a new commentary from Jim Hightower. Then, Joe Yuhas will be your host for Good Old CU. His guest today is Lila Tolderlund, who's an Associate Professor of Landscape Architecture at CU Denver. They'll talk about urban design and campus design. Then at 9 o'clock, Claudia Craig takes a look at why African Americans have been so disproportionately impacted by the novel coronavirus. According to the Center for Disease Control, 33% of those hospitalized in the US are black. That's a rate that outstrips the relative population size. Today, Claudia Craig speaks with Daniel Dawes, who's a nationally recognized leader in healthcare law and policy. In fact, he was an instrumental figure in shaping the Affordable Care Act. He founded and chaired the largest advocacy group that's focused on developing comprehensive legislation on healthcare reform. That's the National Working Group on Health Disparities and Health Reform. Then Ginger will be your DJ coming in at 9:30 for the Morning Sound Alternative. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. Here's Jamie Sidler.
The group tasked by the state to figure out how to come into compliance with rules about air pollution is hoping that working from home will continue when the state begins to reopen. The Colorado Air Quality Control Commission envisions that businesses might consider letting workers keep up the teleworking wave that has become the new normal. Yesterday, the American Lung Association released its annual State of the Air report, listing Denver as 10th on its list of cities with the worst ozone pollution. The Front Range has long been on the EPA's list of non-compliant areas for the pollutant. Mike Silverstein, the executive director of the Air Quality Commission, told the Denverite that people are learning to adapt to a work world that is remote, something the group would like to see happen, continue, even if it's just 1 or 2 days a week. He said that time is ripe to push harder for a cultural shift. The report from the Lung Association says that almost 9% of those in the Denver metro area, 300,000 people, suffer from asthma, not to mention other ailments. The association says that there are plenty of reasons better air would benefit public health. Meanwhile, as the governor's plan to gradually reopen the state starts next week, yesterday the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment said that at least 486 people had died from the coronavirus, nearly 40 more than the total reported Monday. And as of Monday, about 850 people were hospitalized with symptoms of the illness. More than a week ago, the JBS meatpacking plant in Greeley announced that it was investing $1 million in COVID-19 testing kits for its employees. But Denver 7 is reporting that promises by the company to provide testing have not been kept. Informed sources have said testing was stopped shortly after it started. The state reports that at least 100 employees at the plant have tested positive for the disease, with 4 having died and 2 currently on ventilators. The outbreak at the JBS facility attracted national attention on April 10th when Vice President Pence spoke about concerns during a White House briefing. The State Department of Public Health announced a 2-week closure of the plant, but it is set to reopen this Friday. Sylvia Martinez, a spokesperson for Latinos Unidos of Greeley, said that they can only assume the reason testing was stopped was that the company does not want the number to come out, which would be bad PR. The State Department of Health, the Weld County Department, and JBS did not respond to the station's request for information. It was an unusual welcome last night for Boulder's newest police chief. Maris Harold was greeted via video conferencing when she joined Boulder City Council for its weekly virtual meeting. Boulder announced last month that it had hired Harold for the job, making her the city's first female police chief. Harold said she was looking forward to her role despite this being a strange time to be taking a new job.
I think that I have all the tools in place to really make this a model agency and to really mimic the Boulder reputation across the country and internationally for being innovative and progressive and bringing police departments into best practices and model policies and procedures.
Harold has more than 25 years in police work and previously served as the chief at the University of Cincinnati's Police Division. Boulder City Council also received an update on local COVID-19 data last night. We'll have more on that after headlines. A judge in Denver has ordered that the name of a candidate for the Democratic Party nomination for Senate must be placed on the ballot, even though she fell well short of the required number of signatures in her petition effort. Michelle Farinho Warren has substantially complied with the election code signature threshold, the judge wrote in a 28-page decision. The judge agreed with her claim that the COVID-19 pandemic created unprecedented barriers to signature collection. Including Farinho Warren on the primary ballot would mean three candidates will vie for the Democratic nomination to face incumbent Republican Cory Gardner. Andrew Romanoff and John Hickenlooper have already qualified. Colorado Politics reports that Farinho Warren is a nonprofit leader and an immigration rights activist. In a statement, she said that the ruling ensured that they are one step closer to giving Coloradans choices that are not just between the establishment and a career politician. The Secretary of State's office has not said whether it will appeal the decision. Yesterday, the Lafayette City Council unanimously approved extending the city's moratorium on oil and gas operations for another 6 months. Last November, the council had extended the moratorium until May 30th. The Daily Camera reports that the city staff had said the proposed regulations on oil and gas are impacted by the ongoing rulemaking process of the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. That process has been delayed by the coronavirus pandemic. Staff said that extension of Lafayette's moratorium will allow the time necessary to update regulations and will also track those of Boulder County. Today's weather will be sunny with a high near 68 and a chance of showers after 3 p.m. Tomorrow, showers likely after noon, otherwise mostly sunny with a high near 64 and breezy. Right now it's 59 in the front along the Front Range. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
It is 11 minutes past 8 o'clock. Boulder City Council received news about local cases of COVID-19 last night, while also tackling what comes next after the statewide stay-at-home order expires at midnight on Sunday. KGNU's Ros Brown says local health officials told council that social distancing and face masks must continue, especially because testing is still limited.
Governor Jared Polis has been communicating with health professionals and Colorado mayors this week about phase two of COVID-19, scheduled to start next Monday. Safer at home, as it's being called, will include the gradual opening of the state. But Boulder Mayor Sam Weaver told fellow council members the governor said that doesn't necessarily mean businesses will open on April 27th.
But it could be that on April 27th, people at, say, a hair salon can go in and begin preparing their business to receive customers. And once the guidelines for hair salons are out, the public health order, then they can open for business. So I think there's still a TBD about that. Monday is when the stay-at-home order is lifted. And so for a lot of people, individuals, that has maybe immediate effect. But for businesses, it's not clear what it means yet.
It's estimated about 75% of state residents are practicing social distancing, which is believed to reduce infections. Nonetheless, Susan Modica, Boulder County Director of Health Systems, told council the exact number of cases cannot be calculated.
You may have heard the governor repeat the statistics. Colorado has 10,000 reported cases. However, the state believes the real number is closer to 65,000 to 75,000 Coloradans.
Boulder County has reported about 400 cases of coronavirus and 20 deaths. As in other parts of the country, Modica says older people have an increased risk of contracting COVID-19, a more difficult time recovering, and a higher rate of death. She said that higher risk is also true for Boulder County's Latinx population.
The fact that the Latinx population has 28% cases, this is double their percentage of the population in Boulder County. And obviously they're 14% of the population and have 28% of cases.
She added that the virus is exposing inequities in local healthcare access that need to be addressed.
We need to think more about prevention of chronic disease in Boulder County. Prevention of chronic disease is really critical. We know the Latinx community has this in higher numbers. And as I said before, we know that people with chronic disease experience the virus with more severe symptoms.
So far, local ICU hospital beds have not been overwhelmed by coronavirus patients. At the same time, experts say 150 tests per 100,000 people are needed to avoid a backslide. But according to Boulder Community Health CEO Robert Vissers, right now, Colorado is only capable of 29 tests per 100,000 people.
So we are pretty far behind on our ability to expand our testing. And it's going to be critical as we start to relax some of these stay-at-home orders.
Modica said long-term social distancing measures will still be necessary and added that Boulder County may need to tailor its Phase 2 response.
I think that we are going to look at the order and going to consider some options that may involve, it could involve an extension of the existing stay-at-home order, could involve other modifications or approaches.
The governor says elective medical procedures will be allowed as of April 27th, and Vissers acknowledged that people have been putting off trips to the hospital even when they need to be there.
If I had one message to leave to spread to the community, is that we are starting to see significant harm in our community and our patients because of people deferring care, being afraid to seek care. So my encouragement is to please go see your doctor. There's probably not a safer place in Boulder than the hospital. So it's one place where we test everybody with any symptom, and we have not had a positive employee for over 3 weeks.
Council was also told that Boulder may be able to open its municipal golf course next month, but just when libraries or rec centers will open is still TBD. For KGNU, I'm Roz Brown.
Today is the 50th anniversary of the very first Earth Day, and there were a whole series of events scheduled to take place around Colorado all of this week. Well, in response to what's happened with the coronavirus pandemic, local activists have moved everything online. Today, there is an online climate strike happening. Tomorrow, there'll be a focus on divestment, and on Friday, the local activists will be doing live streams with an emphasis on electoral responses to climate change with the theme of getting out to vote. Now, all of the live streams coming from Colorado are being broadcast on the Facebook pages of CO Climate Strike and 350 Colorado. But this morning, we're going to bring you some of the local voices of people involved in the climate strikes that are happening online and the climate activism. First, we'll hear from poet and spoken word champion from Colorado Springs, Ashley Cornelius.
Mother Nature is a Black woman who is tired. If the way you treat Black women is any indication of how we treat this earth, I am terrified. She, a bruised and battered woman of generational trauma, calls herself survivor. Prides herself on being resilient, how she still grows after years of abuse. But you say she was asking for it, showing off those precious resources like that. What were we supposed to do with a forest so thick like that? I mean, we drilled her and took what was ours. In fact, she didn't even seem to mind that. You cut down her foliage in the name of progress. You put up houses and called this society. Tear down homes of living creatures and call this necessary. Exploit her beauty, sexualize her natural landscapes, and sell her by the square inch to the highest bidder. But isn't that how you treat most women? Gaslight us, make us feel crazy, say we're making things up, cause Mother Nature to get angry, to warm up, to square up, call her hot flashes a woman's trouble. Can't you see that we're in trouble? When she heats up and burns us down, the ice caps are dripping, and all you can hear is rap lyrics. She is burning up from your ignorance. You call this fake news when all she asks for is the truth, is the recognition, is for us to come with the same energy to save her as we do to save ourselves. These tornadoes are her pleading. The tsunamis are her cries. Earthquakes are her pounding her chest. These storms are her yelling for us to listen. And honestly, some of y'all have never grown up with a Black woman, and it shows. Never learned how to honor a Black woman, how to listen to her intently, how to protect her resources, aid in the growth of her kingdom, rebuild the parts of her she has sacrificed for her family. This is how you treat a Black woman. How you treat Mother Nature, Gaia, Mother Goddess. She has been providing for us since the beginning of time. Benevolent offerings, exponential love and care. Her skin, dark and rich as the soil that brings forth life. Her hair, coarse and curly foliage, a collection of ecosystems. The thick underbrush of her afro is shelter and warmth. Her body, as in nature, does not have straight lines, is overflowing with curves and bends, her hips wide, full of oceans and waves. See how she is swelling and ebbing with every moment. Her eyes are constellations, guiding us home every single night. Her beauty is our responsibility. We must protect Black women. We must protect Mother Nature. We must listen to and believe her when she tells us she is hurting. She is tired. She is worn. We owe her reparations. We owe her our survival. We owe her to listen.
That's Ashley Cornelius, a champion spoken word poet from Colorado Springs, one of the people involved in the live streams that will be happening in celebration of Earth Day. In fact, 3 days of events starting today. A lot of local young leaders involved in organizing the virtual climate actions. We'll hear some of them next.
Hi, everyone. My name is Jeeva Singlavin, and I am a Colorado Climate Strike lead here in Denver. And climate justice is important to me because, one, it affects people of color, especially Indigenous people, and two, it affects the health of many other young people as well. So first, it affects a lot of other Indigenous people, and many legislators think it's okay to just drill on their sacred land, which is not. And that's why I strike, and that's why I have been working along the IIYC, also known as the International Indigenous Youth Council, led by Tomas Lopez Jr., which has absolutely been an amazing experience, where I've had to help other Indigenous people make sure that they get the access to resources that they need. And at that same time, this affects the health of many other young people. As someone who wants to become a mother in the near future, I have to say that I've read a lot about how air pollution particles have reached many of the mother's womb and it affects the fetus. And as someone who's extremely young, I mean, just thinking about 10 years down the line, I could never imagine that happened to me. And I don't want it to happen to me. I don't want it to happen to other young people who dream of becoming a mother. And that's why I fight for the climate. That's why I fight for the rest of the other young people as well. Thank you so much.
Some of the voices of people involved in the virtual climate strikes and climate actions. And you can find more of our coverage on how environmental activism has moved online because of what's happening with the novel coronavirus, as well as links to the various different live streams. It's all online at news.kgnu.org. There are 3 days of events planned by 350 Colorado. You can find out more and catch their live stream at their Facebook page. That's at 350 Colorado. It's also at the Colorado Climate Strike Facebook page, at CO Climate Strike. And all of the global Earth Week events are listed at earthdaylive2020.org. But as we have been covering here on KGNU, a lot of local organizations are stepping into this and hosting their own events. Sustainable Resilient Longmont hosting a panel with Youth Voices today. You can find out more at their Facebook page, Sustainable Resilient Longmont. And the Alliance Center in Denver hosting a series of online events. You can find out more at their website, thealliancecenter.org. It is 8:23. You're listening to KGNU, and it's time now for Make Them Hear You.
Make them hear you. Make them hear you. And tell them in our struggle we were not the only ones. Make them hear you. Make them hear you.
This is Make Them Hear You with ideas how you can have your voice heard before Congress. Congress people are trying to immediately pass the Medical Supply Chain Emergency Act of 2020 to force President Trump to implement the Defense Production Act of 1950. There are two identical bills in question, Senate Bill 3568 and House Bill 6390. By coordinating the manufacturing and distribution of scarce, in-demand medical supplies, this bill is an attempt to address the growing inefficiencies within all 50 states and thousands of hospitals currently competing against each other for medical supplies. By doing so, they hope to get our frontline medical workers the PPEs they so desperately need. Since the first case of COVID-19 was diagnosed in Washington State on January 20th, the response from the federal government to this pandemic has been fatally ineffective. From personal protective equipment to ventilators and tests, healthcare workers are still treating COVID-19 patients without the supplies they need. Clinics and hospitals are out of respirators. Even masks are running low. In some hospitals, providers are forced to use a single mask for multiple days, even though these masks were designed for one time. The desperate, warlike situation in some hospitals include patients lining the hallways and refrigerated trucks being used as morgues. In the United States, the only institution that can lead a strong and coordinated response, ensuring adequate production of medical equipment and providing widespread testing, is the federal government. Our leaders need to ensure the health and well-being of our healthcare workers while also taking the necessary steps to slow the pandemic. That includes the Medical Supply Chain Emergency Act. This should not be a partisan political issue. By passing the Medical Supply Chain Emergency Act, Congress can force the White House to take this action. Congress will be addressing this issue when they look at the next emergency COVID funding bill. Meanwhile, President Trump continues to drag his feet on using the Defense Production Act, our most important law supporting the production of necessary supplies in times of emergency. If you have thoughts on the Medical Supply Chain Emergency Act of 2020 to force President Trump to implement the Defense Production Act, Senate Bill 3568, and House Bill 6390, you can contact your senators and representative. This is Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.
It's time now for Naturally.
Greetings, welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars. I love springtime and I love seeing all the wild plants coming up. And there's one plant that is considered a very noxious weed in many parts of the world. It's called Japanese knotweed. The old Latin name used to be Polygonum cuspidatum, and now it's Fallopia japonica, native to Japan. And it is a member of the rhubarb family, or the Polygonaceae family. So Japanese knotweed is a very close relative of rhubarb and buckwheat and yellow dock. Well, sometimes the plant is called Japanese bamboo or Indian bamboo. It tends to grow very prolifically and it can take over. And that's a reason to be concerned. But rather than spraying it with pesticides, which we know is bad for the environment, for the water, the air, I also wanted to tell you, when this plant is young, you can use it like rhubarb. You can cut the young shoots before the leaves have unfurled, and you can make a rhubarb or Japanese knotweed compote. I like to cook it with cinnamon and raisins and apples. You can even make like a rhubarb pie. You could add it to your smoothies and juices. It does contain a vitamin C and beta carotene and magnesium. You can use these young shoots before the leaves unfurl to make a gazpacho, a soup. But one important nutrient that's getting a lot of press is something called resveratrol. And resveratrol is something that's helping people with Lyme disease, as well as people that are recovering from illness or need to strengthen their immune system. And if you look at a bottle of something that contains resveratrol, you'll see that it comes from Japanese knotweed. So sometimes it's really easy to consider a plant an alien. You're not from around here. Well, Most of us, if we go back a few generations, aren't from around here. And sometimes these plants come in for a reason, to help clean up the soil, to help make it difficult for people to walk through an area that's really been traumatized. So I'm encouraging you, if you have Japanese knotweed in your yard, you may want to dig it up so it doesn't take over and form a huge fence. But rather than poisoning it, you can cut it, dig it up, and make some food out of it. There's all kinds of wonderful recipes online, using it in a soup, in a curry, in making puddings, juices, wine. So it's really free food. And rather than judging before we really know the whole story, don't poison it. Learn to use it and keep its population under control that way. Thanks for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.
And we're dipping into the Naturally archives on Wednesday mornings right here on KGMU.